The following interview is with General George A. Lincoln, L-I-N-C-O-L-N. General Lincoln was Director of the Office of Emergency Preparedness. The interview was conducted on January 9, 1973, in General Lincoln's office in the Winder Building. Terry Good conducted the interview. At a point somewhere past the halfway portion of the interview, General Lincoln asked that one of his deputies participate in the interview. Subsequently, Dr. Hawken Lindjorg sat in on the meeting. Dr. Lindjorg's name is spelled L-I-N-D-J-O-R-D. His first name is spelled H-A-A-K-O-N. His nickname is Hawk Lindjorg. Terry Good asked General Lincoln three questions prior to the commencement of the taping of the interview to give General Lincoln some ideas of what was to be covered. Essentially, those three questions were, which subjects or topics did General Lincoln believe to be the most significant? Secondly, which topics the least documented? And finally, which topics were of the greatest interest to General Lincoln? Prior to turning on the tape recorder, General Lincoln began to talk about the history that was being written of one of OEP's programs. The work was being conducted by a Dr. Harry Yoshpe, spelled Y-O-S-H-P-E, at the point where the taping begins. General Lincoln is making some references to the value of this history of Dr. Yoshpe's whenever it would be completed. Testing 1, 2, 3, 4, testing 1, 2, 3, 4, testing 1, 2, 3, 4, testing 1, 2, 3, 4.
A sort of basic grist from which to start to grind the mill will be in this history of Yoshpe's, which I've just had time to glance over a few pages, but he's gotten a hold of pretty well what goes on. Yoshpe's history will give the basis for probing and discussion 5 years from now. And probably what I'm about to say is is going to be in there. The president told me to get OEP out of politics and back in the business it should be in. He left me to determine what he meant by that, if he knew. He also told me to emphasize my position on the National Security Council in the allocation of my time. Well, for the first year or so, that enjoinder was important because the National Security Council was very active in reviewing policy matters, and it required special staff capability to handle the National Security Council capability. In fact, there was no staff capability in OEP to deal with National Security Council matters when I took it over. It was necessary to build that capability rapidly, and the first staff officer I got was Hawk Lindjord, who's now an assistant director, who'd been a professional, he'd been military, but he was a professional planner. And at the same time, I borrowed one military officer who taught for me, who was very good at the business, when they were in effect the substitute staff for a while. The OEP was not what I would call a staff division when I took it over. I found it's not really organized to operate a staff division or policy division. It was in the three previous directors had averaged less than 3 years, averaged less than a year apiece, and they had had a mission from the president of liaison with the states, really telling the states about the new programs available. Had, I think, paid relatively little attention to whatever the traditional mission might have been. In fact, with a previous director, a very nice fellow, Price Daniels, told me that I really didn't need to concern myself about my field organization. It would take care of itself. Not sure how wrong that was, whether in the operation of the Nixon administration, the field organization has been crucial to dealing with putting out fires and dealing with the ones that wouldn't be put out, witness the 90-day freeze. He also told me that the disaster operation would pretty well run itself. Well, in fact, the year that he'd been in office, there hadn't been really an important disaster. And so that was his experience. Another aspect was that we had a Congress of the other party. That makes a whale of a lot of difference to a director of OEP, because these committees are not necessarily friendly, and you're fair game. Anything you do, you're the president's no man on disasters and on other things. And I've been assured, in the short time I was given to consider whether I want to take the job or not, that I wouldn't have to appear before Congress except maybe a pro forma hearing now and then on a budget. In fact, I am going before the 25th discrete congressional committee tomorrow, which is quite a lot, maybe a record. Quite a few of them. Several of those I've appeared several times before. Of course, you will before the Appropriations Committee. I have my 5-foot shelf of hearings that I guess you're going to pack up and send with me. I've had to defend the new disaster law. Present, defend, and God knows how many hearings on oil and energy, which is a traditional issue. Turning to organization, there's been a continual struggle to get an operating organization, including operating staff procedures, to get things done right and on time. I suppose that I rewrote 2/3 of the papers during the first year. Now I don't have to rewrite very many. There was no staff procedure, no business of short business of coordination and concurrence. still slips around the place. I borrowed Foreign Service officers and military people to teach staff work to, by example, and also in key positions to this operation. My first executive assistant was borrowed military, and of course my current executive assistant is retired military. On that, by the way, might as well say now, because it won't come out for a long while, that the real key to our operation in the 90-day freeze was that I borrowed back all the military fellows that had worked for me and put them as a task force to get procedures and organization going and to break bottlenecks. Again, this does not detract anything at all from the accomplishment of everyone else involved. The fact of the matter was that you had to move so fast and sometimes so abruptly that you couldn't very well depend on the traditional members of the organization. They might be too polite, wait too long. The main thrusts of activity, I suppose, well, first, there has been a main thrust overall, which is to build a civil emergency organization and operation. Responsive upward to the needs of the president, responsive outward and downward to the needs of the country and of the this maze of organization bureaucracy we have in Washington, because we've had the civil emergency charge. This has flowed in four related ways. One of those has been the disaster assistance mission, which is a considerable part in the agency by law, and which happens pretty well on a day-to-day basis. For instance, I have a chlorine barge down the Atchafalaya right now that I'm worrying about. It's cut broke loose from a toll, smashed into a bridge, and evacuated. Alleged to 16,000 people, getting EPA, the Corps of Engineers, my own people, Coast Guard in there. Later tonight, I'll know whether it's important or not. This involved continual operation coordination with 15 or 20 different agencies. It has moved from being a public assistance program, fixing roads and bridges. Yes, working with the Red Cross crisis situation, that sort of thing. It's expanded to include a great deal of personal assistance, which means supervision of loans, legal aid, you name it. Now secondly, there's a whole area of government preparedness, which when I came into the place was thought of as nuclear strike oriented, with a maybe a little bit of conventional war orientation, and that's still there. We have the preparedness for it. It's been sharpened. But it's been expanded to a dual-purpose operation, sometimes called crisis management, sometimes resource management, and illustrated by what you're listening to on the telephone here. That one oil company, through bad management, has run out of jet fuel, and in all of all places in the New York airports, and of course the people that they serve are screaming. And we have a fuel crisis anyhow, or fuel tight situation all across the country. They probably would have run out even if we didn't. And somehow or other, they think the federal government has some oil. A more serious part of this, of course, is that there's a whale of a crop drying problem all across the Middle West. And if they don't get propane and natural gas, well, the crops will spoil. And so you go. And as of 10 o'clock this morning, why we faced a Pennsylvania railroad strike 3 days from now, which occurred with the start of starving all the chickens in New York and New England within 5 days because they're short of corn and protein. We got that strike postponed at least 30 days. And you hear from the governors, you hear from the people, you hear from the press, and you always hear from the congressional delegation. Crisis management. Short range, long range planning that goes with it. The third thrust related to the second, unfortunately, because our crises seem increasingly to be fuel and energy crises, is the stems from the president giving me the oil import program in March of 1970 to deal with crisis and coordinate, or with policy and matters and coordination, with the advice of an oil policy committee. And there's no more complicated, criticized program in the U.S. government and the oil import program, probably no more controversial one. We had a year-long study before this, which is controversial. And so I sometimes have said that I spend 40 hours of my week on oil, energy, and 40 hours on disaster, and 40 hours on my other jobs. In order to do anything about, to think sensibly about oil imports, which after all are an increment filling the difference between demand and supply, you got to think about both the demand side and the supply side, and so you immediately unravel the whole energy skein in order to understand what you got a hold of. And this has not been understood, by the way, until about the time that I came along. Maybe I contributed to the understanding. People were just yelling about oil imports, not about such foolishnesses that we controlled the price of gas so that no sensible person would drill for it. So as a result, we're getting short of gas. They didn't know it then. They damn well know it now. It was interrupted all along across the Middle West. And the substitute was oil, and we were busy passing laws cleaning up the environment, and as a result running coal out of business, and the only thing you could use is oil, of course, which we're now short of, oil or gas, we didn't have the gas. These are the sort of oddities of the way our country's been conducting its affairs lately, and probably continue to conduct its affairs. So this is because there's no other across the board focus for energy matters in government. We got it. And I have the only across the board energy staff in town now. one of the problems in this, by the way, is that there are important agencies reporting to Congress and not to the President involved in this, such as the AEC and the FPC. There are national security matters that concern the Department of Defense and critical foreign policy matters. And then there's the Department of Interior, the Resource Department, and the Department of Commerce is dealing with industry. And particularly interested in the petrochemical industry. Such agencies as OST and what have you. So we do such things as starting a conservation program to meet short-term problems of possible blackouts and end up producing a report on long-term energy conservation because there's no one else around town to do it. Now I said three, there's a fourth element to this, which is illustrated in that chart by something called research source analysis. You have to have sort of a thinking analytical capability in this business, which involves the handling of a terrific amount of data. So we have an assistant director for resource analysis and have struggled to have this as sort of a service operation to all these other things that are happening. And hidden in that, but not on my direct payroll, is a good computer analytical operation, which is now about 140 people, which is paid for by the Department of the Army. There have been the thrusts of what we've been doing in these four areas. Now, you ask which are most significant? I would say that I would put priority of significance to the government preparedness, which is crisis management, resource management, dual use of sort of think lines of thought and capabilities. Which is one thrust, and another thrust is disaster assistance, which is expanded to a heavy emphasis on disaster preparedness. Third thrust, which is the whole oil and energy business, because you really use the same ways of approach across all three. Now, as to documentation, there'll be documentation around the place, of course, and plenty of it, but to try and sift it. I've been in this business, by the way, because I was General Marshall's chief of plans and stayed on with Eisenhower, and he became chief of staff. And there are two or three books, the Army Historical Series, where I'm the favorite fellow for footnotes. And I had to edit one of those. History of OPD, Command Post of War. This was done with a fellow who's now head of state, INR? What's his name? nice guy. Good historian.
The historian over State Department?
No, he's now head of intelligence and research. Assistant secretary level, but he was then a historian. Started as a historian in the department in the Army in 1945. Young fellow. I remember the manuscript came to me, 1,700 or 3,400 pages or something like that, and I had the damn thing. He made a mistake of putting the come-in numbers on messages in his footnotes. I don't know why they let him do that, because the actual messages were classified top secrets. It took five or six years for some reporter to come in and ask for the message that was referenced there, and that's what broke the that was one of the ways in which they kicked up the ruckus about what did MacArthur think about Russia coming into the war with Japan, because they got the messages. Why, they were my messages stating what he thought. Which were a little different from what his aides were saying he thought. So I was called and asked if MacArthur was lying by the reporter. I said, no, I don't see the general said anything yet. there we are now, documentation. What's these documented around here? I asked Mr. Linger to come in. Ask him to come in here and meet Mr. Good. You know, I said the director has been here all the time. I mean, and who's seen most everything go around here. Let's ask him what's least documented. I've written lots of memoranda for record on what I've done, but not complete. Don't have time with this, the way this telephone goes.
This is one of the reasons for these type of oral history interviews, is to attempt to bridge the gap, to fill in the holes where the documentation doesn't exist.
See, this fellow who was calling me there was Peter Flanagan, who was musing over something. Mr. Lindjord, this is Terry Good.
Good night,
and
sir.
He's on the, well, he's really in the historical business.
Oh.
Mm-hmm. And I'm just going to tie this off by throwing to you his question. What's least documented around here?
Least documented?
Least documented.
Very briefly, Mr. Linjard, what we're trying to do is collect information for the President's Library.
Right.
And in the course of doing this, we found that these oral interviews are very valuable vehicles for filling in the gaps where there is not much documentation.
Right, right.
And as I was explaining to General Lincoln, 5 years from now, we would like to come back to him, perhaps, and talk with him in detail about some of the activities that he's been involved in here. In order to prepare ourselves for these interviews, we would have to go through the files, perhaps. And if we had some idea ahead of time that this activity or that activity or something else was perhaps not as well documented as, let's say, General Lincoln would like it to be,
mm-hmm.
we could come back to him after having done as much preparation as possible on our part, and then sit down with him and say, perhaps you'd like to fill in some of these holes in the records. We've looked at them, and we do find that there's something missing here and something missing there, and we have your perspective on it. So,
well,
keeping in mind, this is a very general thing.
Right, I'm trying to. Well, for example, the economic stabilization, the 90-day freeze is extremely well documented. That was a very peculiar experience in that it was for a finite period of exactly 90 days. It was a very intense activity, probably the high point in terms of activity during General Lincoln's tenure here. And that's documented in the form of what I think is a very good history. It's 200 pages, very well coordinated.
This is what Dr. Yashby is doing?
He has done. That's published.
All right.
That's finished. So I'd say that documentation is very good. Of course, behind that is a mass of files that he has or knows where they are, so that you can get all the details. So that's very well done. From there, it ranges downward, I suppose. And I think the disaster business probably the next best document, because we have a series of documents that we've done on that. A series of reports on some of the major disasters we've had, like Camille and some of the others. We have this three-volume preparedness report to the Congress, which is pretty comprehensive, pretty definitive work in its area, too. We have in preparation now another disaster legislation study that is going to be quite complete and comprehensive, and a whole lot of lesser. So I think the whole disaster area, both response and preparedness, is quite well done. Current, General Lincoln is a much better person to speak on this, but the current problem we're having with monitoring energy shortages, like the fuel shortage in the Middle West, that probably is more spottily documented, I would suppose. That, for example, has, well, the way of documentation, there are things like standard procedures for running these field boards, sort of procedural business, and then there are a series of reports you made to the President on some of the worst of these situations. But there's sort of no systematic overall description and analysis of that function, to the best of my knowledge. And we haven't really tackled that one. Of course, it's a newer function.
So that would be an area that...
An area that General Lincoln would be particularly well qualified to fill in on detail, because he had this expertise. The continuity of government business, which tends to get fairly rapidly into classified material, is, I think, well documented in procedural terms. Various planning documents. I think probably it's a pretty fair shape. Stockpile, we do an annual, semi-annual report to the Congress on the stockpile, which is a good running start on that. And then there's been a study going on, run by the NSC staff for almost 3 years now, on policy estimates of the stockpile. So between our regular reports to Congress and this study being done, mobilization-based planning, industrial mobilization-based planning. We're at work right now on a sort of concept paper that's coming along, I think, that tries to set forth just what this area is, what the various components of it are, where they stand, and so on. So although it isn't, I'd say not finished yet, I think that's coming along pretty well. The oil import program and the green energy business, entirely.
Well, there's a well of a lot of on that,
yes.
Records.
Right. There are a number of policy papers on it. Various regulations issued. It's an area that I have personally worked on.
Yeah, there's a well of a lot of papers on it.
There's, for example, a conservation study, which is a fairly massive document.
But I also, papers for meetings.
So. Right. Well, there would be records for, I guess, they're all policy committee meetings, that kind of thing, which I'm not directly familiar with. But I would imagine that that's fairly well.
Fairly you well. Run through this, it's a fair amount of documentation.
Yes, I should think so. I guess that leaves, well, economic stabilization planning. Before I talk about the freeze, which is this particular 90-day period we went through, but we still have, General Lincoln still has the responsibility for planning for economic stabilization in emergency situations. And we've been doing a good deal of rethinking that area in the last 6 months, but there again, there's a fair amount of documentation and stuff exists.
Are there any areas where massive gaps exist because of the crisis being one which you had to handle for the most part over the phone, and if we don't have a chance to talk with some of you gentlemen, perhaps the record will never really be adequate or complete?
Well, the paramount of this on these disasters, but they begin to pale as time goes on. Agnes, for instance, Camille, people tried to write a history of Camille and said nothing happened, and of first few days while I'm making all the decisions over the phone. Didn't have time to write a memorandum for record.
Of course, you really can't capture all of that. Even well, like during the freeze, all I'd say is well documented. There isn't sort of a detailed record of all the decisions General Lincoln made day by day in telephone call, calls to regional directors or other agencies. You can't capture the whole.
No, and this again is one of the reasons why these interviews we find so valuable, because we expect this to be the situation. And,
I think our annual report, although it doesn't go into great depth in these areas, covers the ground.
Yeah,
it touches on all the areas of our concern. For example, we have not a large scale, but a significant task involved in NATO sovereignty planning. And there's a lot of staff documentation in that area. And that, for example, is covered very briefly in our annual report, but there's quite a lot of stuff. We have a fellow named Marcel, who's been at this for about 10, 15 years. He's an excellent files record. I don't think of any really major gaps.
That covers both the international realm as well as the domestic realm, then I would gather.
This is, I was talking about now the international side.
Okay. Well, you know, from your perspective, are there any areas that you think that we ought to pursue in order to ensure that adequate documentation will be collected, either through this type of interview or whatever other way? If we can get these guidelines now, we can begin to prepare and plan.
Mm-hmm. Well, I don't know if you mentioned the job that Harry Ushby is doing.
Yeah,
I've heard about that.
He's and working on a more detailed history of the 4 years.
Well, of course, there are things that just don't get in writing. There's
an
early running these internecine things that exist. The whole internecine business with civil defense, which I've quieted down.
Right. Relationship with civil defense.
And
of course, the documentation
on that's pretty good.
The basic documentation is good because
there's a
series of exchange of correspondence between
the whole ruckus with the OMB
early in the administration. Right. One thing, I'm not sure what your plan of work is or what your timetable is, but to talk to General Lincoln, there's a fellow named Gene Quinlan, who's going to leave here next month, Assistant Director for Government Preparedness, who handles the relocation business and also the energy crisis and a whole range of other government preparedness problems. He's just an exceptionally knowledgeable fellow, and a fellow who has his thoughts well organized. He would be, in my judgment, should be one of your top candidates for making contact with before he leaves.
Up to this time, our debriefing interviews, as we sometimes call them, have been limited to the White House staff and the domestic counsel, and in one or two instances, CIEP, Peter Flanagan's shop mm-hmm. now, and in one case, CEA,
mm-hmm.
Moving over across the street into this operation is a brand new field for us. So. As I was explaining to General Lincoln, I was rather apprehensive about starting with the senior level member of the office, because heretofore we have started with the staff, become acquainted with them and the projects that they've been involved in, and thereby more or less prepared ourselves to come in and talk more informatively with the senior staff. And so I've come to him with the idea, what things should we ask you about 5 years from now when we're prepared? What should we prepare ourselves for and come back and talk to you about? So that's what he's been filling me on.
Right. Well, he happens to know the organization in such detail that you couldn't.
I've been told that by several other people here. And,
do any better.
It took me 2 years to find out what I had.
It's a complicated outfit. I haven't mentioned Major Lincoln has, but I mentioned our computer support operation, systems analysis and systems and information systems. Support activities. The others have been sort of subsequent programs we talked about. But we do rely pretty heavily on the supporting computer operation. several of these other areas.
Is this something that's new or greatly expanded over the previous administration?
Greatly improved, I would say, is the main thing.
I had it, but I didn't see that it operated.
It wasn't functioning.
The damn computer wouldn't operate when I took over.
That's right. No, it's a very effective computer.
Is there a story to tell in this area, General Lincoln, that we should perhaps bone up on prior to cutting back and talking with you at some point?
I'm not the expert on getting the computer going.
Yeah, I think there is a story to tell.
There may be a story to tell, and then the whole computer. Who's the most expert on that?
Well, I suppose Gaskell is probably.
Gaskell
is the most expert.
Or Gaskell or something.
It's called the Mathematics Computational Laboratory, MCL, which is under General Lincoln's operational control and supports OLP exclusively, but it belongs to the Army. It's part of it. It's an Army.
Well, by and large, OEP has documented its activities and its responsibilities quite well then during this period.
I think so. From what Ray O'Connell tells me, they have this archivist, what's his name? Can't think of it offhand anyway. But they've been feeding materials regularly to the White House archivist.
Well, that may be the office that I'm from. Jack Nesbitt is
Nesbitt's the
fellow that's
in
charge of this.
He apparently has been very happy with what he's gotten.
Yes, and
at least that's what I've been told.
That's
told
true. That's true. Goldacore has been working with us too, and if we had the type of support from records officers or people that are involved in this field throughout the executive office of the president, we'd be in great shape.
Now, there is an area we haven't really touched on since I came in here, and that's the National Security Council. And during the first few weeks and months of this administration, there were very frequent meetings, and General Lincoln was, of course, an active. Of course, I don't know how you, that's all pretty highly classified stuff, and I think
that would remain that way.
I think one would have to rely on the NSC
right.
as the primary source for that.
But could we, through the NSC records, could we get some feel for your inputs and activities and responsibilities in that area, General Lincoln?
Well, they've not been, well, they were there, but they were not central because institutionally OEP isn't there.
Most of the items on the agenda are not items in which OEP has direct institutional interest. It tends to be Defense Department, State Department, Defense Department, sometimes CIA, and of course the NSC staff. Occasionally some Treasury Department. Most of our problems don't get on the NSC agenda.
Well, I guess that second category, which subjects are least documented, I don't need to be too concerned about.
Something's there.
I think we're in a fair shape.
I wonder if that's in part you have to be prepared in terms of your documentation in order to face crises as they crop up on the spur of the moment. If you don't have records to rely upon, then you may be in sad shape.
I think that's part of it. It's also part of the fact that if we cover such a wide range of things in order to keep track of ourselves and understand ourselves, we have to work at the problem of putting on paper what we do. At least we've done the General Lincoln's guidance, we've done a lot of that.
Well, let's move to the next category then, and that is in preparing for this future interview or interviews, which of these subjects would be of most interest to you in terms of discussing?
I actually come back to my three great categories of the government preparedness, crisis management, resource management, and one, disaster assistance. Energy business. Now, the disaster assistance you go on and on with the specific disasters and problems.
Are any of those of special interest to you?
Oh, Hurricane Camille, of course. Agnes. Operation Foresight, which wasn't a disaster, but which I kicked off early in the administration to do some preventive work in Upper Mississippi so we wouldn't have a disaster. And that concept is carried on. San Fernando earthquake, yes. Other sort of things that people this year, which was less last year, which was a year of floods.
Rapid City maybe is a special.
Yeah, Rapid City is an example.
Big flash floods. Unfortunately, I had a lot of fatalities.
So these three areas then would be?
Be the areas.
Well, that's fine, and we'll go back and try and write up all of this and.
Transcribe it and put some commas in it.
At this point.
Verbs and subjects agree?
I don't think I'll try and transcribe this, but we will write up a resume, and that we will send to you for your review and modification, and then whenever we come back to you, the in-depth interview, that would be transcribed, of course. Again, I don't like to transcribe these because we like to treat them as a preliminary type exchange, and the phrasing of the information at this point, we don't always think is always that historically significant. Just, as I say, on a fishing expedition at this point. So, I think between the two of you, I've got an excellent feel for what we need to prepare ourselves for, and a certain amount of satisfaction in knowing that the documentation will be there. Well, I've enjoyed it immensely. It's been very profitable for me, and I thank you for your time.
Well, it's interesting to be asked to sort of capture.